Hi, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025, and our friend Andrei Martyanov is back with us. Welcome back, Andrei.
My pleasure.
Let's get started, Andrei, with the proposal, the U.S. proposal for a Ukrainian settlement. And here is what J.D. Vance said about it.
Issued a very explicit proposal to both the Russians and the Ukrainians, and it's time for them to either say yes or for the United States to walk away from this process. We have engaged in an extraordinary amount of diplomacy, of on-the-ground work. We've really tried to understand things from the perspective of both the Ukrainians and the Russians. What do Ukrainians care the most about? What do the Russians care the most about? And I think that we've put together a very fair proposal. We're going to see if the Europeans, the Russians, and the Ukrainians are ultimately able to get this thing over the finish line. Again, I feel pretty optimistic about it. I think everybody has been negotiating in good faith, but it's now time, I think, to take, if not the final step, one of the final steps, which is at a broad level, the party saying, we're going to stop the killing. We're going to freeze the territorial lines at some level close to where they are today. And we're going to actually put in place the kind of long-term diplomatic settlement that hopefully will lead to long-term peace.
Andrei, he's talking about freezing the line, the battlefield, the line of conflict. As we know that that is not possible.
No, it's a no-go. It's just, that's it. And United States, listen, Doug McGregor already went on record a couple of days ago at Daniel Davis when he stated clearly, it's a Trump's war now. So no matter what they try to juggle there, it is a no-go. What they have left, and if you listen to what I spoke to Daniel Davis a couple of days ago, you know, it's just for United States to get the hell out of the way. You know, simple as that. If United States wants to go, so yeah, sure. Russians have their not just goals, it's just conditions, period. It's either this or, no cigar. That is why there's so much panic in NATO. So-called peace negotiations broke down. I mean, it didn't break down. There is Rubio is not there. You know, Witkoff is not there. What to talk about? What with who? And the question is that Vladimir Putin, regarding this Financial Times BS, you know, the pile of bovine excrement, which they pretended as that people who know something, you know, told us. No, Putin couldn't have said that because Putin is a guarantor of the Russian constitution, being the president of Russian Federation. And all those four oblasts are included in Russia through a constitutional process within their borders, administrative borders, as they existed at the time of the breakup of the Soviet Union. Game over. It's not it's not debatable. There's nothing to discuss. About this Crimea thing, it's just laughable. Russians laugh. And so, what can I say? And could it be their coordinated dance between Russia and United States in terms of providing off-ramp for Trump administration and say, you know what, we did all we could, go to hell? Possible. It's not excluded at all. Again, Witkoff last time was sitting with Vladimir Putin, no less, for 4.5 hours. Of course, they discussed Iran. How long it took? Probably 50 minutes, 40 minutes. And we suddenly have the war is an all-go now, which is good. But what about the rest? I don't think there was explanation to Witkoff. Because Witkoff knows this. He's an experienced guy. He is by no means stupid. But I think so there was a messaging. There was the thing of the conditions on how Russia can provide the off-ramp for the United States. Because the United States needs to get the hell out of this whole mess, which they created, of course, with the help of the European, war criminals, essentially. And so that could be the case here. That we say, you know what, we did everything we could. You cannot, and of course, it's all everything on this matter is related to internal political dynamics in the United States. Trump again brought the bunch of neocons on his in his cabinet. Okay, so Mike Waltz, you know, the one of them. Rubio is kind of like, yeah, he's a errand boy.
He's somehow in the middle, Andre. He's trying to play both.
Yeah, he tries to. Yeah, he's he has to. You know, he is a very important figure. He is the, you know, the Secretary of the State. You cannot deny the importance of this opposition. So, and when you look attentively, it's like, maybe it is a game. You know, maybe it is a dance. So I'm not saying that it is the case, but it could be at least partially the case, because Trump and the United States desperately need, by the logic of the circumstances, the off-ramp. And as we saw how the Iranian crisis was resolved to a degree, you know, Trump faces obviously the headwind, you know, with all those neocons and loonies and fanatics from both, you know, Republican and Democratic Party. The Congress is utterly corrupt. And so there you go. That's what we have now.
Andre, isn't that amazing? Just you talk about Iran, the Democratic Party, the party who tried to make a deal with Iran, right now they're totally against Donald Trump in terms of the negotiation. They're doing everything to avoid.
I speak about one of such representative, Jason Kroll, you know, together with Mike Waltz. They wanted to investigate Russia's war crimes. These are not normal people. They are, I'm a veteran. You know, I've been in, I deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq. Okay, yeah, sure. So what did you do? Have you fought the real enemy? Well, you practically shoot up people who are defenseless. And even that, you know, they kick your butt. You know, the problem is that, of course, these guys, they are sore losers. There are people who are naturally stupid among them, make no mistake. But most of them, they have the psychology of a grant. They do nothing wrong with the grant. You know, there is no army without grants, make no mistake. I do not use this in any kind of the contemptuous way. But the problem is, you put them in front of the real military professional, for example, with Russian military academies and war colleges, and let alone Academy of General Staff. They won't understand even what will be trying to convey to them. But these are the type of people. Oh, I was in, you know, 75th Regiment, you know, whatever, Ranger and things like that. Okay, yeah, sure. You went through what, 4 weeks of tactical training, the lower tactical training. Do you know how to run the staff of battalion? Let alone the staff of a regiment or brigade. Most of them, they have no clue what they're talking about. They don't know how to plan operations. They don't understand how strategic operations are planned, how they involved into the actually the system of the state governance. They have no clue. They sit there in Congress. Basically, you know what? Well, they are there to make money and peddle influence. That's what it is. Not all, but most. And that's the result. No matter what Trump wants, first, he has the rhinos. Rhinos are not really Republicans. They are neocons primarily. That's how they call it. And as for Democratic Party, oh my God, it's fanatics. For the most part, that the people who are, you would call modern Democrats, and when they say it shifted to the left, it has nothing to do with the left. It has everything with absolute insanity of the neoliberalism going bananas, you know? And there they are. DNC, there's a bunch of criminals sitting there, you know, who unleashed that. They are responsible for the death of more than 1.4, I think now, million of Ukrainian soldiers and more than 2 million maimed and destruction of the Ukraine. So those people, none of them ever experienced any difficulty. None of those veterans who deployed to Iraq and, you know, experienced ever the real combined arms warfare and being under sustained fire, especially long-range fires. When you have the, you know what, 3M14 caliber with its 400 kilogram warhead flying into your location, okay, this is not a nice experience, to put it mildly. Or Iskander flying with a half a ton. So, and these people have no clue what it is. They never experienced anything. And their max thing is IED, which still could be, yeah, they kill people, they destroy vehicle, but IED and RPG, that's about it. Here and there, once in a while, you know, they don't understand what it means to, like, British accomplish this. They went, they planned this thing with the Kursk invasion. 75,000 killed. That tells you the level of those people. They are military amateurs, and not only amateurs professionally, they do not understand what real war is.
Andre, Vladimir Putin, years ago, he raised a very key issue, which I do believe still is the case with the United States, which was the how the domestic policy, this fight between Republican, Democrat, the establishment, the people against the establishment, is shaping the foreign policy of the United States, as Putin is putting the foreign policy of the United States in some sort of inconsistency that nobody knows how to deal with. And that's still the case. You look at Russia today, they don't know what to do. They don't know who's going to be after Trump, who is the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, United States broadly is not governable. It's the country which used to have a more or less, I mean, it was still corrupt, but at least the political system was functioning. But once the Soviet Union collapsed and those stimuli from the outside in terms of the, you know, all kinds of the things performing of the democracy, they love to talk about democracy and things of this nature, they just evaporated. They declared themselves the victors in the Cold War. And for some reason, they decided that, oh, we destroyed Soviet Union. They didn't. Soviet Union destroyed itself and had nothing to do with United States. Well, very marginally. And the point is that America doesn't know what war is. For all love of Americans, and I subscribe to it completely, I not only support, but I exercise the Second Amendment, you know, to own and bear guns and things of this nature. America is extremely illiterate in terms of war. U.S. Army is illiterate in terms of war. I mean, they don't, not a single officer or grunt ever fought defending United States. All these things like, oh, we are defending democracy. Oh, please. I mean, nobody believes this BS, you know, it's just complete garbage, you know. So the Imperial Expeditionary Force primarily, and which is designed to fight here people who are grossly inferior. Okay, there are even during the World War II, the heroism and dedication of the United States Army and Navy and Air Force, you know, nobody wants to deny them indeed heroism and feats of you know, operational planning and things like that. I mean, in Europe it was primarily Red Army. Okay, they went in there when pretty much the issue was already settled, you know. So that is why Russians, not without justification, look at the Allies landing in Normandy, not so much as to defeat Hitler as to prevent Soviet Union and Red Army marching to the beaches of Normandy, you know, so that, which is, I mean, could be the case in the end. But the point is that ask any graduate from U.S. Army War College, you know, what do they know about combined arms war? They know nothing. What they know about combined arms warfare is some fantasy from the Gulf. That's it. They beat the crap, pardon me, from the backward, you know, semi-literate army after half a year, you know, deploying forces with impunity. It's like, sure, yeah, if you think that that's the war, yeah. But reality is no American military person ever was under the sustained, especially long-range fires, and pretty much being hunted down. They don't have this. Well, except for those who went there to as volunteers or mercenaries, many of them are country officers. But we will not know the fate of those, for example, crews of the Patriot Pack 3s or NASAMs, who have been, well, killed by Russians, you know, together with their air defense complexes. They're going to be hiding it. Because, well, essentially, all American wars since World War II were expeditionary wars against supremely inferior people. And even here, United States failed miserably. And here we are today. So, and they face something which, you know, they cannot handle, while Russians face something which is not governable and doesn't understand the risks at least part of the government and part of the American military, they do not understand the risk because some of them are fanatics. They have this, you know what, some have complex of superiority, others have, well, sometimes complex of superiority is actually the adverse side of the complex of inferiority, which you'll try to hide it, because that is why the United States was going around since Obama administration declaring itself the finest fighting force in history. Manstein and Zhukov were spinning in their graves, looking and listening to this, let alone the Kutuzov and Napoleon, you know. So, and it's just, it's a sad state of the affairs, but will they learn? I don't know. But they have to understand that in this stage, even in conventional way, Russia can harm the United States. Of course, it's a very, you know, so to speak, fantastic scenario, because United States immediately will accelerate to the nuclear threshold. But point is, you know, Russia can actually harm the United States in conventional way and horrendously, without, not in Europe, in the United States proper. Many people still don't get it, you know, but when you begin to explain to them that couple of salvos from guessing class Saabs at U.S. proper, and my gosh. So that has to be understood in terms of the balance of power. Balance of power shifted dramatically, and Washington cannot take it. They cannot resign themselves to the fact that they are weaker force, much weaker.
Andrei, one of the terms that I would assume would be so much important for Russia is the buffer zone. In your opinion, how wide that would be, the buffer zone? Is that going to be as wide as this sort of, we can say, from Odessa to Kharkov to the north, Odessa, Nikolaev to Kharkov, the line of these, the boundaries of these cities would be the ultimate point of the buffer zone. That would be the case in the mind of Russians?
It's a possibility. Don't forget, some operational level actually aims, they change due to the dynamics of the special military operation. For example, nobody thought about it, but well, London and its pathetic military planners, they presented this opportunity. Now you have what? You have Sumy operational access. Russians didn't want to go there, but now they are going there. They are near Yunakovka, and yeah, it's about what, 15 kilometers from Sumy. And they say, okay, we might not necessarily go even further, but if you look at the evidence and reports, they are evacuating Sumy now, Sumy administration. So you see, it's people say that's the target of opportunity or objective of opportunity. No, it's not even opportunity. It's the reaction on what have been done to Russian civilians in Kursk Oblast, which were atrocities of unimaginable cruelty. So, and Russians go there, and after that, will they take Sumy? Maybe. But if they take Sumy, probably they will extend the buffer zone or security zone after the, so to speak, final settlement happens. Such way that at least artillery and most drones will not reach Russian territory. But yes, I think you are correct that it's going to be this type of line, you know, from Kharkov down to Odessa or something like that. So it might not necessarily be a straight line, but it will be some kind of a contour, which will make sure that no artillery system, you know, can reach Russian territory. And most of the FPV drones and things of this nature, they will not have the range.
Andrei, when you hear Europeans are talking about if the United States wants to leave, they can leave, we can go with the war in Ukraine. Are they exaggerating? Are they somehow, are they not capable of seeing what they are in terms of the military, in terms of the capability, in terms of the economy, in terms of the problems they're facing? Why do they need to do that? Is there any reason? Is there any logical reason behind that, in your opinion?
Well, there is a method. Logic is not strong feat of Europeans because there is nothing left from the Age of Enlightenment, rational thinking of what Euro produced, you know, at that time. No, I mean, European elites and much of the population, not all, but much, they hate Russians, simple as that. They view them as subhumans. I'm already kind of, you know what, ad nauseam repeating this thing. There's a lot of racial elements to that. Many of them consider Russians untermensch. And they considering that Europe, well, it's going to decline much more in terms of economy. They look at those Russians and they're owning those, you know, huge riches, resources. For them, in their mind, with them, well, descending into the whatever we have now, economic and political mayhem, they think that Russians do not deserve that. You know, Russians should give it up, you know. So, and that's what they were doing for the last almost, you know, 1,000 years. They go into Russia, get their butt kicked, you know, roll back, then reconstitute themselves and go back, you know. And you look at this, that's what it is. Plus, it's a classic religious struggle between European Catholicism and Protestantism against Orthodoxy, Russian Orthodoxy, for example. There's a lot of element to this, you know. So, and now after Europe have been defeated by the Red Army, because it was Europe, it wasn't just Germany, it was all of them. French, good Lord. They cannot forgive this, you know. They cannot recover from this, but they cannot forgive. And as the result, you know, you have those people who want to kill Russians. And this element is there. It's to harm Russia and Russian people, Russian women, children. They applaud the atrocities. They applaud the killing of Russian children in Kursk by, well, there are French guys who, for example, they committed robbery, rapes, you know. Poles, I mean, my God. Poles just hate Russians. I mean, not all Poles, make no mistake again, but you had the occasions when even Ukrainian troops in Kursk area, when they would, not only in Kursk though, but pretty much, and this, you know, anyway, along the line of combat contact, they go in and those who have some humanity left in them, they say to Russian civilians, run, because if Poles come, you're dead. Your children, your wives, so. That's what it is. That's the West. And there is nothing to discuss with them.
You remember 2-3 weeks ago, we had an article in the Financial Times, if I'm not mistaken. It was saying that doesn't matter what Donald Trump wants to do, United Kingdom together with France, they're going to do everything to avoid any sort of Ukrainian settlement. Right now, we've heard that Macron's office issued an ultimatum to the United States that territorial integrity of Ukraine is non-negotiable. So what are they talking about? Are these guys really serious about what's going on? Because
they are morons and PR. Militarily, France is pathetic. Remove the nuclear deterrent, which is, they have 4-letter-on-fund class strategic missile submarines. They are chihuahua militarily. Their military history in the 20th century, they are really good at surrendering. Okay, let's put it this way. They are good at forming SS units. They are good. They were good cooperating with Hitler. They're really good, you know, Petain government, machine, you know. They do not want to remember this, but French are Nazis. You know, many of them are. They supported it, you know. So the only, heroism by their men was to shaving heads of those girls who were dating, German officers and soldiers during the World War II. That's the level of expertise. In terms of their operational capability, they are pathetic. UK is not even the army. They don't have the army. Same goes for Bundeswehr. And so whenever these clowns are saying that they can support something, my video is coming up precisely about it, about this French admiral who is the chief of the Office of Transformation for NATO. So those people, it's unbelievable. So just to give you an example, France has about 270, I believe, Leclerc tanks. For some reason, they call them the best tanks in the world, but they don't send them into Ukraine because they know it's going to end up the same as what happened with Abrams, latest versions of Leopards. Challenger, it turned out to be a complete pathetic piece of garbage, you know. So, and they talk too much. Well, Vladimir Putin speaking today to the Military Industrial Commission today, just 2024, Russians produced, okay, Russians produced more than 4,000 armored vehicles, including tanks, BMP-3s, and I mean, what the hell are we talking about? They people sometimes do not understand that all the stock market, those shares of the, you know, remove from France, Airbus, which is, of course, a joint venture, but French do a lot of it. They have an integration facility in Germany too. But remove Airbus and some shipbuilding capabilities in Saint-Nazaire, France doesn't have real economy after that, you know. So, and the same goes, again, what do you have about UK? It's a circus, literally. Their forces are nothing but the sitting ducks. They have no experience of the real war. They do not understand what comes into it. And they don't have economy to support it. If every time you hear from some imbecile from European Commission that, oh, we're going to put economy into the war footing, they don't understand what war footing is. For example, if you take a look at the European Commission, von der Leyen and all that, she's a gynecologist and children's specialist. She won't understand the first thing, what is the war economy. None of them understand. Look at government in Germany. Those people do not understand what CNC, computer numerical control, you know, rigs are and how they have to be integrated to produce. They don't understand what metrology is. Okay, so, and they believe this BS from same imbeciles, which are, well, it's actually comes across pretty much everywhere along, you know, across the all countries, journalists. Most of them are imbeciles. They are glorified language people. You know, they can teach language. In Russia, they can teach Russian. In, you know, United States, they can teach English. But they have no expertise in anything. They don't know anything. It's a Schumpeter's universe now, as he explained, that most people, they do not understand what is going around them. You know, there is some school of thought that literally they think you write some code, nothing wrong with being software engineer, but it, suddenly iPhones appear on the trees. That's the level of understanding. They won't understand what it takes to create modern combat aircraft. They don't. Now we have the people from Dassault. Oh, yeah, Dassault, yeah, Rafale and all that. Did you see the numbers of those Rafales? Russia produced this year more combat aircraft, pretty much, you know, all combat wing of the French Air Force, just to give you an example. And you look at these people, are they serious? Many of them are, because they're morons. But this is, we again, apart from Schumpeter, you know, universe, we're living in the Dunning-Kruger universe, because you cannot explain to moron that he's moron because he's moron. Can you imagine explaining some cretin, you know, who said, oh, I'm veteran, I'm lawyer, you know, I've been, do you know how the staff of the brigade works? Do you know how operations are planned? Do you understand what it means to actually work in analytical function in the staff in order for you to conduct successful operations? They don't know. They're not taught it. And as a result, we have what we have. And when you talk about Europe, it's so bad. It's, you should, I don't know, did you invite Jacques Beau, Colonel Jacques Beau? Jacques explains beautifully, you know. Those people do not even understand dynamics. They are not taught. They don't have their, how to say it, the operation of their mind, operation of their brain, that they can understand the dynamics and trends. They cannot do that. So, and as you look at it attentively, look at Europe, you know, so, and it's pathetic, honestly. And of course, most importantly, they don't have energy. They cannot produce anything. Everything they will try to produce will cost its weight in gold.
Andrei, if you were, because in order to understand what's going on with the case of you, as you mentioned, with the army in Germany, in the United Kingdom, if you were to compare the army of Ukraine before the conflict started to the army of any of these countries in the Western, I'm talking about Western European countries, how do you compare the Ukrainian army to the army they have in the United Kingdom, in Germany?
The best army Europe ever had since Hitler. They were more powerful than French, British, and the rest, German, and the rest European armies combined, if you look attentively, in terms of numbers, in terms of the equipment, and, well, in terms of, it was their mistake. They were trained by NATO people as the result. So, but, yeah, I mean, what can I say? It's their West in general have been exposed as a paper tiger, and especially what many people still do not understand. It's not even the ground, the average ground on those countries. The officer corps is dismal. As I already, Jacques told you, they couldn't even understand what they were looking at because they are so much, that's how incompetent they are. And you, again, my video is coming up shortly about this French admiral, you know. So, I mean, he commanded pretty much most important ships in French Navy and all that. But he talks about, like, condescendingly that, oh, Russians adapted to NATO weapons. NATO weapons are so inferior that I cannot explain to you. You know, these people literally don't understand basic higher tactics, the higher level tactics, which is brigade level tactics, operations, they are amateurs.
So the way that you're picturing, let me just interpret what you've said. The best army in Europe was fighting Russia. Mm-hmm. And the best intelligence coming from the United States to Ukraine, they were not capable of doing anything. And right now, Europeans are feeling that they can make some sort of change. This is the level of
you cannot ignorance. Fix that. You cannot fix stupid. And again, as I already stated, they are driven by hatred. Okay, they hate Russian gods. You know, take any politician, most. I'm not saying all, but most, they hate Russian gods. They're ready to scratch, spit, you know, throw stone, whatever, just harm a little bit. That is why finally Russia completed full 180 degrees away from Europe, and it should never be again under any kind of the meaningful culture. Well, first, right now it's Europe as it exists today, it's Sodom and Gomorrah, basically. That's what it is. And so I advocated for the Iron Curtain since, I don't know, 2016, probably. So, and those people from Europe who share, you know, common values, with the primarily Christian values, conservative values, they're more than welcome in Russia. They are met with the open arms, you know, and so, but the rest, I don't know. I don't know what you can talk to them about. They are not normal people, and normal people in the sense that they have any humanity in them. Again, listen, British invented concentration camps, Germans and, you know, Europeans took it to the next level, you know, and you know what was happening. And, well, I guess that's the way of Europe, but thankfully Russia is done with it, you know, and there were attempts, I believe, to get back into economic thing. IKEA now is trying to, you know, register its brand again in Russia. Oh, good luck getting that, because they started to complaining all kinds of those companies that their price of entering Russia back or re-entering Russia is so high. Of course, it's like Siemens, you know. Nima, you disappeared.
Can you hear me, Andre?
Yeah, you just kind of, you know, but did you hear me? Yeah, it was the freezing of the frame. So yeah, this is what it is. I mean, nothing that we can do about it. You just can't talk to those people. those few common sense, and I'm not saying that all Europeans like that, but those few people who have common sense, they have morality, they have ethics, they are minority. Majority of, there are some, people who live there, actually, and I get letters all the time, emails, and people tell, good Lord, you don't know, half of it is much worse than that, and things of this nature. So Europeans themselves, I actually have a great deal of sympathy for them. You know, there are many decent German people, British, Britons, I'm sorry for them. They cannot change anything. Because they don't even have the political instruments to change anything, no matter who they vote for, you know. And of course, so the country was destroyed by their elites, you know. But yeah, Germans voted for, if you look attentively what the alternative for Germany is, it's GDR. Yeah, then this is where the normal Germans are. People with, and people from Eastern Germany, which used to be a German Democratic Republic, you know, they say, yeah, the West is done. This, just basically walking stomachs, that's who they are. Beer, football, that's about it, you know, and all kinds of the other activities which are not normal for any normal person. And so, it's sad, but it is what it is.
It's so sad to see Germany.
Right. They voted for it.
Yeah.
They voted for it.
Andre, here is what Marco Rubio said in terms of the conflict in Ukraine.
You know, Russia's not just going to roll over Ukraine and take the whole country, and Ukraine's not going to push them all the way back to where they were before 2014. So what I would say we're involved in is understanding what is the Russian position. We have a better understanding of that now because we've actually spoken to them after 3 years of not speaking to them. What is the Ukrainian position? And figure out, are these guys even in the same neighborhood? Because if they're in completely different zip codes, then we may have to conclude that they're so far apart that peace is impossible at this time. We've done our best. We've put a lot of time and energy at the highest levels of our government. We'll continue to be willing to do so as long as there's a realistic path forward. If at some point we determine that we're just too far apart and not enough movement is happening, we may need to move on to other priorities because there are a lot of important things happening in the world. This is not our war. We didn't start this war.
Actually, the United States did start this war. But it's the same dance. And again, it's their basically hedging and also preparing public opinion that we did all we could. And he's correct. I mean, essentially, Rubio sounds reasonable in this, except, of course, that we didn't. Trump administration, actually, it was during Trump administration when the rearming and training of the armed forces of Ukraine started in earnest. So his first term. But yeah, in the sense that he's saying things, he is pushing all right buttons in this respect.
By the way, the problem, I think the points that he was raising, he was correct when he said that Russia is not going to capture all of Ukraine because Russia is not.
Russians don't want to. Russians do not want the whole Ukraine. Yeah. That's the thing which many people have to understand. Russians do not want to govern those people. Most of those people which are left there, they are not Russia's friends. Ukrainian population at large hates Russian gods. They, good Lord, you should see what their social media, what is happening. They're talking about how to kill Russian children, dismember them, hang them on there. So, yeah, that's the type of people. So, no, you don't want them.
And the second point was that Ukraine is not able to capture Crimea and other...
Many people do not understand. Every day, last 24 hours, Russians liberated a bunch of other hamlets and things like that. The steamroller moves to the west, so it's just, Russians are operating now. They have the free hand in terms of not basically conducting operations which will create more losses on the Russian side. If you can do it in a week and losing maybe nobody, few wounded, than doing it in one day and losing, dozens of killed. Why? Go for a week, just do the thing, And their kill ratio is astounding. It's astounding. And essentially, when you look at the children now, whole women's formation, you know, in Ukrainian army, 18 years old, again, 14 years old, crying out loud, you know. So, and yeah, that tells you everything you need to know about mobilizational potential of the remnants of the armed forces of Ukraine. And Russians, again, I speak about this all the time. It sounds horrible. It sounds inhumane. But Russia didn't start it. So, and Russia will kill whatever will be thrown in them. Simple as that. If it will be the last Ukrainian, so that will be to the last Ukrainian, as London wants and Biden administration wanted, Russians will oblige. They will kill them all.
Yeah, and the issue with the way that Marco Rubio is picturing the situation, in my opinion, is that he just putting the blame on Russians and Ukrainians. To they don't agree. We know that there is no Ukrainian part. We know that who's running the show in Ukraine. Yeah. And that's why they have to talk with Europeans, with those people who are running the show in Ukraine.
Well, I mean, it's too late now anyway. So it's all about, again, off-ramp. Putin doesn't speak to Europeans. Europeans, as we know now, it was admitted by, not admitted, it was stated actually by people such as Orban, Viktor Orban, that some European leaders, who does it? Well, Macron probably. The guy's a coward, you know, and he looks at the country which, you know, they destroyed essentially. So did he call Putin secretly? Most likely. So could it have been this moron, what's his name? Oh, good Lord, Jesus. German Olaf Scholz?
Merz.
Absolutely possible, you know. But they are trying to cover, you know, cover US, CYA, you know, because obviously they face their very serious domestic issues, very serious. And in this case, they don't want to advertise it, but they need to play to the public, which, by the way, brainwashed, especially their conformism, conformity, is, for example, the national trait of Germans. They believe, many of them do believe, their media. So goes for British. They believe this garbage which is published in there. Oh, yeah, BBC talks about it, a bunch of British BS corporation. The pedophile center, actually, so central. And so when you look at these people, yeah, they need to do something. The only thing they care about, their well-being and their power. Their well-being is the derivative of their political power. They need to stay in power, apart from the fact that many of them qualify as criminals, not only for the international reasons, which, for example, once this whole thing over the real international tribunal on the war crimes committed in Ukraine will start by Russian side, but even domestically, look what they did to Marine Le Pen. And she's a globalist, okay? She is nothing new, essentially. She is a professional opposition leader, you know, who never had any real plan or anything to save France, which requires saving. But then again, maybe it just should let it go, and by 2050 there will be no unified France. That's what is happening. And for example, for Macron, does he have enemies? Oh, you bet he does have enemies in France. Do they want his head? I'm pretty sure they do. But again, look at French. They voted him in twice. So, and the last time, you cannot say that there was some kind of the, you know, corrupt, elections. He won by a landslide. He beat Marine Le Pen by, you know, it's a knockout. French decided this to be their government. Let them enjoy it, you know. And same goes for all Europeans. And, what can I say? I mean, it just unbelievable what is happening. It is so beyond what we ever saw, okay? And so United States needs off-ramp. And again, do I like what was done? No, of course not. But as I repeat constantly, morality, in a sense, doesn't have the place here other than the cold-hearted calculation. Russians could be as cold-hearted as anybody else when it needs to be. And United States matters. It's an important country. unlike Europeans, for example. And the question here is how you find this modus vivendi between the two nuclear superpowers. Make no mistake, United States case, it's not just nuclear superpower. It is declining power, and it is very much schizophrenic one. So you are dealing with, in a sense, with the monkey with the grenade. During Biden administration, that was actually the case. So you need to find this modus vivendi to calm things down, wind them down. And Rubio makes this very important thing. We have more important things to deal with. Which things are he is talking about? Is he talking about China, of course? There is a whole lobby over there obsessed with China. It's too late. United States already lost economically to China. Okay, we know that. Look at the Chinese economy, which is monstrous. Okay, but they still think that they can do it. Okay, sure, yeah, let them do it. You know, but you saw yourself what happened to them in Ukraine, and their. I cannot even comment on this anymore without smile. So it's just.
Actually, they do want to shift. They want to get out of Ukraine. Somehow, I do believe they want to get out.
They do. And yeah, again, and we spoke to Daniel Davis a couple of days ago, and he definitely has his friend of Tulsi Gabbard, and he said, my sources say that Trump really wants to leave. It's over. He means it, you know. So, and looks like we have those indications, you know. So, as much as we can do it in our, so to speak, or seen open source intelligence part, you know, that, yeah, looks like indicators are there, those marks, so to speak, you know, those triggers are there. So, Russia is working with, you know, saving the United States in order for it not to completely implode and go bananas, especially again, monkey with a grenade, you know. So,
here is Andre. Here is what Marco Rubio said in terms of fighting China.
And if one came, could we win it?
What we want to do is prevent a war from China by being strong enough to make them understand that they could never win a war against the United States. A war against China would be a terrible thing.
I know, but if I'm looking, but if I.
And how do they want to fight a war? Here is J.D. Vance, Andre.
The industry alliance will enable America and India to develop the most state-of-the-art maritime systems needed for victory. It's fitting that India, this year, is hosting the Quad Leaders Summit this fall. Our interests in a free, open, peaceful, and prosperous Indo-Pacific are in full alignment. Both of us know that the region must remain safe from any hostile powers that seek to dominate it. Growing relations between our countries over the last decade are part of what led America to designate India a major defense partner, the first of that class. This designation means that India now shares with the UAE a defense and technology infrastructure and partnership with the United States on par with America's closest allies and friends. But we actually feel that India has much more to gain from its continued defense partnership with the United States. And let me sketch that out a little bit.
Andre, the term of India, the way that they're picturing India, do you think that it seems some sort of fantasy to me that they think that after all, yeah, India would be under par fighting, yeah, China?
Yeah, it's BRICS, India BRICS. Obviously, Indians will look for profiteering on all sides. But hey, that's India, all right? That's how they operate. It's modus operandi for them, and everybody knows that. Do not forget, all this funny talk about preventing war with China, Chinese do not really want war. I mean, they are commercial civilization primarily. But of course, 25% of the Chinese energy goes through the shipping lanes of communications out of Persian Gulf to through Indian Ocean. And we know the tensions between India and China, which of course Russia is now trying to, you know, harmonize, and it looks like it's working, okay? But of course, United States wants Indian Navy. It's a significant Navy, and it will be more significant. And of course, these ideas of AUKUS, you know, place those Virginias at Perth in Australia, which immediately gives them the operational space to just You just go out of Perth and immediately dive in. Off you go, you know, just wonderfully, beautifully located city, you know, and continent. So they want to control the shipping lanes of communications, of course, you know, in the Indo-Pacific area. And considering the fact that monstrosity of the Chinese shipbuilding industry, which is building ships like cars, you know, so it's already overtaken United States Navy by over in the surface combatants, you know, and some of them, well, there's a whole other story will about the weapons there. But the point is, yeah, they will procure more and more type 055, which is state-of-the-art, beautiful ship, you know, destroyer. It's more, looks more like a cruiser, actually. And obviously, the only Trump card, so to speak, which United States Navy has in this respect, it's a submarine force. China lags dramatically behind in submarine technology. But then again, who knows what Russians will be willing to share with Chinese. And so in this case, United States is looking for any kind of the allies in the area, because probably in 5 years, United States Navy will not have enough required forces surface-wise to even, you know, counter China plan, they call it, which is funny, People's Liberation Army Navy. They will be deploying it into the Indo-Pacific area, and that will present an operational trouble for United States Navy. Unless, of course, God forbids, nuclear submarines are good for actual war. You don't have them to demonstrate the flag. Their whole idea is to be clandestine as possible. But, I mean, in terms of surface combatants, China will be countering United States Navy, and it will be countering it from the ranges, which make even their beloved American carrier battle groups not in the range of do something about it. You know, prior, let's say 30 years ago, United States would say, oh yeah, we have carrier battle groups, we'll, you know, just but aviation takes off and launches and all that. Suddenly you are talking about the missile technology, which in the ranges of 1,000+ kilometers, which essentially makes even the E-2 Hawkeyes, you know, which are the main eyes and ears, if you wish, well, eyes primarily, of the United States Navy and carrier battle groups, they will not be able to sweep something to detect it, because it will be beyond their range, even at the, you know, the edge of their patrol, you know, station. And that changes everything, you know. So just to give you an example, as Russians, the 3M-22 Zircon hypersonic weapon, it, in itself, once it's launched, it's over. It has a range of 1,500 kilometers. It's twice longer than whatever this carrier battle groups actually can even sweep and know around. So we're looking at the change and dramatic shift in the issues of the tactical and situational awareness for the types of forces. And Chinese are getting there too, you know, at least on surface combatants. And so United States desperately needs some kind of the additional allied force, in a sense, which is significant Indian Navy. And of course, as I already stated, AUKUS, the whole idea is to have this base, because immediately you go out of Perth and look, you're immediately looking at the to the north of the shipping lanes of communications, where the fleet of the tankers from Iran and Persian Gulf delivers the much needed energy to China. That is why Chinese want now the airlines pipelines from Russia, which are within the continental landmass, and the United States will not have the access to them.
Andre, do you feel that Donald Trump would be able to deal with China without having any military conflict, without having any real war in terms of military and all of that? Can they keep it economically?
No, economically, the United States already lost to China. It's beyond the doubt. It's just a matter of how those possible little details, you know, with the tariffs and all that. Today, Trump already stated, oh yeah, we'll go back on tariffs on China. So there you go, you know. So, listen, you go to Walmart, okay? And no matter what you do, it's all Chinese, okay? Plus, China has been unloading, obviously, the treasuries, and it have been reorienting itself, not only to Europe. Europe will become, is becoming poorer, and it will not be as solvent as it used to be. It's still kind of worth stuff, but there is a lot of turn of China towards the East Asia, because they understand, well, you look at that, somebody, my gosh, Indonesia, 250 million people population. You look even in Vietnam, you know, those 100 million people. And you look at those countries in there, these are huge markets, you know. And so, yeah, and we already saw this incredible event, which many people do not understand what happened. China, South Korea, and Japan got together to discuss economic cooperation. This is unprecedented. And this, I believe it was held in Beijing, okay? So this is like, yep, that's the thing. And do not forget, let's not, as much as I ridicule Huntington's Clash of Civilizations, you cannot deny the fact that those people, racially, they are very much close to each other. This is ancient great cultures, you know, amazing cultures, you know, and they get together because racially they are close, you know. It's like, how to say it? It's just the reality of the world. They are Asian nations, they're Asian race, they're Asian civilizations, and they already trying to kind of touch a little bit, you know, how we can, you know, get together and cooperate. And Chinese say, and Chinese are commercial civilization, okay? They like to, love to make money, they like to profit, which is, well, per se, nothing wrong per se, as long as you maintain the ethical attitude, you know, towards that. But the point is that they will get together. They are the same civilization as Asiatic civilization. Now, look at even Vietnam. And you remember the 1979 war and things of this nature. And do not forget that a lot of what happened, horrible things which happened in Cambodia, Kampuchea, was actually driven by the Chinese geopolitical ambition, including the Pol Pot. It was a SOB, you know, from China. Vietnamese were the ones who owned, literally, Russians stole them. You are there, go, just clean this mess up. And the Vietnamese army went there and did the thing. But look at this, suddenly, there is a huge pro-Chinese lobby within Vietnamese Communist Party. And Vietnam, obviously, they are neighbors. So what do? You begin to develop trade relations. Why do you want to fight? You know, when you can actually settle things, you know, in negotiations and be mutually, you know what, beneficial to each other. I mean, it's so simple in this respect. And even with India, it looks like there were some issues which have been settled with Russian, you know, mediation. About the border issues and things of this nature. Yeah, you want this Eurasian land mass to be, it's already becoming new technological and economic, it's already new technological and economic superpower, hyperpower, if you wish. And so United States has only one entrance point for saving itself. And I've been writing about it for two decades. The only entrance point for the United States to at least, you know what, soften its fall and find the way to exist as just another great power, one of three, is Russia. You know why? Although the United States has some resources, but it's so much to do with Russian resources. Oh my God. And the, all of it is today. It's a high-tech development. And yes, there is even the Chamber of Commerce, United States Chamber of Commerce stated, we have like, you know, all those people standing like on the high start ready to run to Russia immediately. And Russian stated, you know, it was stated by Mr. Putin. Europe is gone, but yeah, we can talk about Americans coming back. This is how it's done. You operate in your own league. Your own league are what? That's three countries, China, United States, and Russia. You deal with this, you find this balance, tripod is good one, it's more stable. you know, unlike it is there, you know, two superpowers, two camps. No. We want tripod. You better have even the fourth leg, but India has a long way to go to become that, although it's getting there somehow, you know. So when you look at this, oh, it's much more stable. Yes, we have to keep in mind, Eurasia is already gigawatt power, militarily, economically, technologically, what have you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Andrei, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Great pleasure, as always.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Take care, Andrei. Bye-bye.